You mean the extension?
There was one fellow that wanted to have an Athabasca railway, but it just never came to being. It never got off paper. CNR and stuff came for us first, eh, with their railways and stuff, and his never came to be. Because what he wanted was from Athabasca branch out the railway. So we would have been the, instead of Edmonton being the depot, Athabasca would have been the depot for the railway.
Well, the, that's one of the big stories, and there could be a fair amount of scandal attached to that, because what they claimed was that when they came to extend the Athabasca Railroad, some of the cabinet ministers in the provincial government had lumber holdings that way, timber holdings, and they had timber holdings that way. And they wanted those railroads to go out from Edmonton and to develop that country. And when, of course, when the railroads did go out there, that was what killed Athabasca.
There's a lot of, see, like, I've read the different things in the old papers. See, the Edmonton Bulletin has a lot about the railway that should have been in there, you know, talking about it, news of the railway and stuff like this, and that, and they pushed for a great many number of years for it.
Is that right?
For it, no, but it never did. You know, it was the CNR and stuff that did come, it wasn't Athabasca's own railway that went out and stuff. But there's a lot written about, you know. See, it's really hard, though, to... It's all about, because it's a little paragraph here and, you know, a couple months later, another little paragraph.
And you gotta dig and dig and dig.
Yeah.
How many days would you have spent reading?
In archives?
Yeah.
Over the last 3 years, I must have spent about 2 months there, and I haven't got here for.
Okay, I wanted to ask you, on what basis are you writing this book? Now, there's a whole slug of books on the market that have been written by other towns. We've got quite a few of them here, where they go back and trace the story of families and settle, and it's kind of, it's a very, very unemotional record of a bunch of facts. John Brown was the first farmer, and he settled on this quarter, and then Bill Smith came along and settled on this quarter, and so forth and so on. And then they give you some kind of a write-up on the John Brown story and what happened to his family, and the Bill Smith story and what happened to his family. That's the standard format for writing a book. Is that the type of a book you're writing? No, I didn't think so. It doesn't appeal to me either.
No, I've read a lot of those. Like, that's like, before I even started it, I got a bunch of books, like, because I had belonged to the Edmonton Public Library too, and I had went in there and I got all the books that they have had on the different towns and stuff that have written their history. And there's only one that I really liked, and it was of the Red Deer area. And it's only a little book. You know, it's not a big, you know, book or anything. It's, and it starts, like, from day one, kind of the first guy who come. And it just goes through. There's not too many names or anything like this in there. You know, there's, they mention people.
You mention people in connection with
events.
Right,
but there's no family histories in it.
Yeah.
And this is the sort of thing that I want. You know, what I was just thinking of, just basic facts. Okay? Add in the story that you know that it is true. You know. But otherwise, other than that, that's about it.
If you really get down to it, there's room for both types of books.
There is, yeah.
But the other type, the one, the type I was talking about, is a kind of a community function. It's not a function of any
some like to me, some like that, I would get more out of it if I read first a book or knew the history of the area first. Okay? You know about when the first settlers come, you know, when the town started to grow and stuff like this. And then when you read the history of the families, well, you can kind of fit them in, mm-hmm. you know, the conditions mm-hmm. of what it was like when they come, you know, and you can relate back. But when you don't know nothing about the history of the town or the area, mm-hmm. it's pretty hard to imagine what these guys are trying to mm-hmm. put across in their own family histories.
Well, when we set this place up, our proposition to the town was that A, the town of Athabaskan with history, mm-hmm. B, not necessarily the county, but kind of the county. I mean, the area surrounding Athabaskan. For instance, Amber Valley is just as much a part of Athabasca as Athabasca itself. Mm-hmm. You couldn't tell the story of Athabasca without and Calling Lake and this sort of thing. You couldn't, in a historical sense.
No, and, it's too hard, yeah.
And the third thing that you can't isolate from the town of Athabasca is the Athabasca River, because there is where the history is, and that's what made Athabasca. Right. And maybe in the future that will be what will make Athabasca again.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that's what I find. Like, you know, it's, you can't say, well, I'm just going to write about this, because you can't. It, you know, everything just kind of falls right into it.
It doesn't, yeah.
You can't exclude it and stuff. That's what I find, you know, like I said, you know, it's just the researching part that, like, I never even thought, had the wildest idea that there would be so much.
Yeah. Now, is there any way we can help you?
Just by, the information that you guys have here, you know, or get in and stuff.
Yeah,
see, one place that I'm going to have a hard time getting to or getting information from is the Hudson's Bay in Winnipeg.
Because that's very expensive.
Yeah. You see, the only way that I would get down there is if I went down there. And right now I can't, you know, do that anymore. But I'm, you know, a few different towns. They've got a matter of going down there and through the ledgers and through the diaries and all of this thing, of the different Hudson's Bay men that were through this area.
We have one very good source, and that is Clara McKinley. Did you ever meet her?
No, but I've heard of her.
Well, she was born here. And she would be in her 70s now. And she has done a lot of work for archives and an awful lot of historical research, mm-hmm. much of which she sold. But she has been to the Ottawa Archives, Hudson Bay Archives, the RCMP, and so forth and so on. Now, I can go to these places, although, you know, I haven't got a huge amount of money to throw around, but I could go to Winnipeg on my own and stay for a week. And the thing that kind of scares you is that a week is not likely. In fact, I'm planning sometime next week to go to the Glenbow Museum and the Heart and the Glenbow Archive. Mm-hmm. Have you been there?
In Calgary, I was through it, but I didn't do any.
Do much work.
No, well, I was just there for the day. We were in Calgary and stuff, and I just went there. And there, that's another place that you need time. You need time,
yeah, and you need money. And I don't mind spending a fair amount of money. I don't mind going and paying my expenses and down there and so forth. But to do a good job, there's got to be some money coming from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. There is no way that you guys could get these places to send you all the information they have.
No way at all. Because in the first place, we wouldn't know what to ask for until we actually got there and looked at.
Well, no. You know, see, like, through the archives here in Edmonton, like, I've got it arranged where if I want something, they'll just copy it and send it out to me now.
Yeah, but you've got enough there. You've got to go there and see it and say, I want this.
Yeah, but it's, they've also got it all you know, set up, and that in, like I'm in the archives here, they've got it all under Athabasca.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got everything listed, which they have, that has any connection with Athabasca.
How much do they charge you for this, sir?
Photocopy. Just the cost of photocopy. 10 cents.
10 cents paid.
Right.
But you can run into a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. It's really, you know, because like all their old ledgers and stuff, hey, well, there was just no way I could have even photocopied it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're too big.
They're too big, because they've got all the town stuff there.
Yeah.
And that, but it's, and even the newspapers, you know, like I was able to only get sections out of the
That's
newspaper
right.
because there's no way you could get photocopied. And they reproduce the, like they've got quite a few pictures there also. But the thing with the pictures is that it costs quite a bit more. If you get them photocopied, they're only 10 cents. But if you get them, if you want another print, that's what runs into a lot of money.
This brick school cost $40,000. And it also cost $500 to dig the foundation. I'm sure it was dug by hand. It's a huge foundation with a furnace roof. Here's something that was given to us. This summer. And this is a man named George Lang, who I knew, say, in the 50s as a farmer around here. And he was maybe the first blacksmith in Athabasca. And that's his
ledger?
He kept reasonably good books, you know? Quite interesting. What do you have on this pedifer? Even in as much as it tells you who was here. See, it's 1970. J. Gagne. Or is it I. Gagne? There was a very famous man here named... There was a very famous man here named Ike Gagne who played a pretty big part in Athabasca in the early days. Particularly with regard to building the first waterwork system. But, you know, that tells you about people. And what businesses were in town.
Yeah, there's, what magazine was it that I found that it listed the business and stuff that were in the town? The Gazette and the Archives. List the major businesses.
Yeah, I'm asking you that.
Yeah. And it lists the businesses and stuff that were here and who was the manager or the owner or whatever. See, a lot of them were just managed by somebody. The owners, the true owners weren't, you know.
All right, now, where, in what building in Edmonton is the Legislative Archives?
The Legislative Building.
It's in there in the basement, yep. I suppose.
You come in, go around the staircase, and it's right there. Right at the back of the staircase, like, you know.
All right, now how about permission?
For what?
Not to use the archive, but to use names. Do you know anything about going after that?
What do you mean when you're writing and you want to quote somebody? Well, as far as I know, all you do is, like with the archive stuff, is I would get permission from the archives.
The archives has that permission.
Right. They have to give me permission to use whatever material that I have, I am going to use from them, or photographs.
You see, we have to do that now. We have to do that here, like I'm taping you now, and to be perfectly safe, I should get you to sign something saying that you have no objection to us using the information that's on this tape for in any manner that we want to tape it. Sometimes you get into some quite sticky situations. Excuse me, just a minute.
Yeah, well, you see, that's where I was planning, like, when I was, like, for everything that I've got, all the information that I've got, everything I've got has got numbers beside from the source or wherever I've got it from.
Here's an interesting little book. Here's the Athabasca directory. I suppose you've probably seen this.
Yeah.
This is 1914.
1914, yeah. I've seen the ones before. They've got those in our place. Athabasca, Natchoka, Athabasca, Tankyokas. There's barely on a page.
Who are you looking for? Go ahead, I can see that.
For the Athabasca landing.
Do you know in what year they dropped the term landing?
Yeah, the year that they
incorporated?
Incorporated the town.
That was 1905.
No. When did the railway come? I think it's 1912, isn't it? 1912 when it was a town. Went from a village to a town.
Something on
the
that.
Year the railway came through, and that was
the railroad actually arrived in Athabasca in 1913.
Yeah.
But according to this paper, and I think this is right too, Athabasca became a town in 1905, although it may have become a village in 1905.
I think 1905 was a village, and in 1912 it was. It was a town.
Is that right?
And that's when they dropped the landing.
Trouble with this kind of history, you know, is that you come across some facts, but they aren't facts.
I know.
I bet you know that, yeah?
I know.
Start with. Life of municipalities began with 1883, and Athabasca was incorporated as a village on May the 18th, 1905.
Yeah.
There were the towns. No. All right, now at that time, this was Athabasca Landing, too.
In the village, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But when it became a town in 1912, I'm pretty sure it's 12 or 13, they dropped the landing. They just named it after that.
I think that is one of the things that I would like to see done. I would like to see this town go back to being Athabasca Landing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess anybody who's interested in history would.
Yeah, they've got a lot more names in this section, in this one here. Okay, do you know anything about the Hudson's Bay when it come here? I'll tell you what I'm trying to figure out. Was Mr. Wood manager? Or did he was he the manager of the store, or was he manager of the Hudson's Bay area here? Do you know what I mean?
Are you talking, say, about the...
Well, they had...
But the real estate aspect of it?
No, no. I'm just trying to... See, what I've been trying to find out, and that's where I think I'm going to have to, you know, get into the Hudson's Bay in Winnipeg. Because I'm trying to... What I'm trying to find out is if he was just the area manager, like if he took care of everything that went on here, and there was another manager at the store. Because there's been a lot of letters that I've read when the Anglican Church was coming in. And they, when they came here in 1897, see, I'm very mixed up on my dates because I get so many dates that I can't, you know, like I have to have it right in front of me. But anyway, when they come here, they corresponded with Mr. McKinley, the Hudson's Bay Company manager, they said. And yet, as far as I know, and as far as I've heard, so this is what I was wondering about. If this Mr. McKinnon. If he just... Yeah, McKinnon.
Or McKernan.
McKernan. I'd have to look up. I'd have to look it up again. I had a hard time deciphering the name from the writing of these letters, even. And stuff, and so, and I've been trying to find, like, other places to find the exact name that is on here, because these are just the letters that have been written by the different ministers and, you know, different people traveling through it to do with the Anglican Church.
This is the first one. Anyway, there was a James A. McKernan, who was a very well-educated individual, who was the secretary of the school board way, way back.
There is something missing.
That's something that I,
Here's what's missing.
Meeting held December the 3rd, 1903. All of these minutes are written in hand. Now, Mr. James McKernan. And that is in 1909.
Yeah. No, this was before that.
But you could have been here before that.
Yeah. I'll have to look at that name again.
Here's something that you might find interesting.
You ever hear of him?
Yeah.
Well, his son donated those. That picture to us on the back of it.
Well, there's a short history of the Secret. And, Secord
owned the store that sold out to the Hudson Bay.
He was a big businessman around here.
Told me. He owned.
He
owned the corner of First and Jasper.
Yeah. Who was it that operated with him?
McDoo.
Yeah, McDoo. There was another guy that came always through here. He lived up by Lake Athabasca, and he used to bring his furs through here. Colin Fraser.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He used to work for him.
I knew Carl Frazee.
Did you?
Yeah.
And he was the one who always bring the spurs through town here.
He was very big in, I think, transportation, wasn't he?
Yeah. There was a lot of boats and stuff built for him here.
And there are still Frazers in Fort Chipewyan.
Yeah, well, there should, yeah. I think his family's left him there. Or part of it, anyway.
Well, I kind of exaggerated when I said I knew him. In 1930, my father ran for member of the legislature, and he made a trip by air up to Fort Chipewyan and Fort Fitzgerald, which was just across the border from Fort Smith, you know that. And when we were in Fort Chipewyan, one of the things that you had to do there was go and see Colin Frazier. So we went to see Colin Frazier, and he had quite a large log house, quite comfortable, very, very long. And the thing that I most remember about it was that he had a pool table in the living room.
Oh.
And here he sat, kind of a little bit like a little king, you know, Colin Frazier.
Yeah.
And you say he worked for McDougall and Secord, quite likely.
I don't know for how long, but because he tried to set up his own business too in the fur trading industry. But it was that same year that he did, I can't remember exactly how many they quoted, other men were doing the same thing, and there was just no way that any of them really made. So what he did, he sold out to McDougall and Secord, and he worked for them, as far as I could gather. But I don't know for how many years it went on, or if that's the way he spent the rest of his life working for them, or whatever, if he turned independent after a while again. Because for a while there was a real boom on the fur industry, and then it really kind of petered out. And then there were just these few individuals left again that did their own trapping and stuff.
Now, as I understand the history of the fur industry, fur trade, most of the fur here ended up in Russia. Because, Russia is cold to start with. And there was a very big class of aristocracy that could afford great big expensive fur coats and fur hats, you know. And, of course, when the Russian Revolution came along, that money class completely disappeared. And when the money class disappeared, the fur trade got very much smaller.
Well, I can't remember.
That would be 1917, you see.
Well, this is way before that. I haven't really done too much research on above 1910.
That's right.
No, I haven't. Like, there's been the odd thing that I've come across and, you know, read and brought home and stuff like. But I haven't, I haven't even nicked the before that. You know, even before the 1900s, there's so much that is just unbelievable. You know, and it's really hard I guess a lot of mine is taking the fact from the fiction. You know, which is which? Which do you, you know? And then going back and trying to find a different source, you know, to see which is which. Because I read a story and then it, you know, sounded really good with something else I had. I go to something else, it's completely different. So, you know, it just seems like it says, I've just been kind of going from different sources to different sources. And so it's just been a lot of reading and stuff. And I just about finished all the Anglican stuff at the archives. And they have a great deal of information there, right in the Anglican history.
No, when you're referring to Anglican archives, where do you mean?
At the archives.
At the archives.
Yeah, Edmonton archives. And they've got all the Anglican churches, books, diaries, everything there.
Well, you see, there's interesting reading in the archives, in the minutes of any organization, such as the United Church, the Catholic Church. Oh, the Catholic Church goes back a long way, too.
Yeah, and it's in French, too, though, isn't it?
Is it?
I think so.